No, I'm not intimidated one bit. Yes, I am. To follow that. Well, on this Independent Sunday, we are in touch, not only with our blessings, for which we are thankful, but we are in a mood to consider freedom, aren't we? We are in these days this week, and we Baptists are a people that are born of a yearning for freedom. And so as we have come together to worship God in this hour, we have sung the hymns not only of our thanks, but our hymns that state faith all over again and state that freedom. The second song that we sang in particular, I hope you were taking in the words as you were singing Christ Our Liberty. Go back and take a look at that one sometime, maybe not while I'm preaching, but go back and take a look at that one and see what you just sang. It is a beautiful statement of faith and what we are here all about. Well, in light of all these freedoms, we have a text today that rolled around of a people who were looking and yearning and wishing in the most fervent way for their freedom. You heard Carissa read our text from Jeremiah earlier, and it was at a particularly sensitive time in the life of the people centered in Jerusalem who wanted their freedom back. They were living in a little kingdom that was really part of the umbrella of the Babylonians at the time of Jeremiah's prophecy. And a bigger picture, if you drop back and read it, was whether they should go to battle for their freedom or whether they should bide their time and wait for a more proper time and act later. And so that is the context in which we sort of stepped right into the middle of the story that felt like it had already unfolded. And you heard the words that you heard as Jeremiah reacted to his fellow prophet Hananiah. Which brings up the question, these two prophets with completely different viewpoints, completely different prophecies that they offered in that context, it brings up a question we all have to consider from time to time. Who will get your ear? That is a lifelong question for all of us to answer, and we always have to be listening to someone. We are always listening to someone. Some of us allow fewer voices than others to take true authority in our lives, but we are all under someone's influence. One writer says that our biblical story today from Jeremiah describes a prophetic showdown. And surely it does, a shootout of words between two of God's deputized spokespeople. It is an intimidating text, and it is an odd text, and yet one that ends up being at a key turning point in Old Testament history. We, the readers, the hearers of these words, are left uncomfortable with the whole notion of having to choose who we might should trust with God's greatest hopes, God's truth. Tony Campolo, most of us recognize that name. He is a world-renowned Christian speaker. And Tony Campolo tells a story that is entertaining and I think germane for today's text. Elizabeth and I and our church hosted Tony Campolo for a week down in Atlanta several years ago. Got to know him, and he told this story while he was with us. It was of a time when he was younger and earlier in his career, and he found himself in an event called a preach-off. That's foreign to me, the notion of preachers competing. This had a scoring system and criteria and judges, and there would be a winner of this preach-off. I don't know how to relate to it, but it was an event he was a part of. And so it came down to Tony Campolo and an African-American preacher. Campolo, obviously a good preacher, a very good preacher. He still, near the age of 80, speaks 400 times a year. He's very much in demand. But he preached his message that he had worked hard on, and he gave it all the passion and all the heart he could muster. And he sat down feeling pretty good about the sermon that he had just preached. But then the African-American preacher came up and he began to deliver a message on doubts and fears. And Campolo says, I felt him kick into gear. I felt him hit a rhythm. Eventually there was a little beat behind his preaching and I began to wonder how this preach-off was going to turn out. The preacher began to talk about, as he neared the home stretch of his sermon, he began to talk about a funeral he had just recently done. Funeral that he had preached at Graveside with the reception that happened back across the way at the church fellowship hall. And he talked about those doubts and fears and hurts. And he began in that funeral to speak to the deceased man who was in the casket. And he said, "Clarence, we're full of hurt and questions. We're feeling weary in our souls. We're dragging right now, Clarence. But do you know what we're about to do? Clarence, we're going to throw dirt in on top of you. And then we're going to go over to the fellowship hall and eat potato salad. We're going to get in our cars and we're going to drive away feeling all low, Clarence, because it's Friday. But you know what? Sunday's coming." And suddenly everyone who was there listening at the preach-off realized he had evoked an Easter motif as he hit the home stretch of that sermon. He said to his friend Clarence, "It's Friday, but Sunday's coming. We got hope because Sunday's coming. It's Friday right now, that's all we can see, but Sunday's coming." And Campolo said he sank low in his seat because he knew he didn't stand a chance. He could hear the audience begin there at the preach-off to eventually shout back with the African-American preacher, "But Sunday's coming, Sunday's coming." And soon the whole room was reverberating with voices shouting, "It's Friday, but Sunday's coming." And the preach-off was over. Well, here we have Hananiah and Jeremiah. And Jeremiah, we instinctively pull for here if you force us to choose a side, because at least we recognize his name. He has a book of the Bible named for him, even if we can't always find it. Some of you couldn't find it earlier, could you, when Carissa got ready to read? Jeremiah is over there just after Isaiah and just before Lamentations, that book we avoid because the title sounds depressing. And so we know Jeremiah. And Jeremiah is here pitted against your favorite TV or internet preacher. The one you'll pull me aside, try to tell me about, but I might not think as highly of as you do. And there's a lot at stake here in this preach-off that Carissa read to us earlier of. One commentary writer says that they stand at the edge of a figurative cliff, the people of Judah. King Zedekiah is thinking about going to battle in revolt against the mighty Babylonians who are in charge of the Hebrew territory at that moment. He's called in his prophets to help guide his decision, battle or no battle. And Jeremiah prophesies, as you heard earlier, that they should not attack, that they should wait and not enter into rebellion. But Hananiah has a firm grasp of what God has done for them in past battles, some of Gideon's and King David's highest moments when they were outnumbered in battle and yet God rose up with them and they found themselves victorious. And because Hananiah knows what he wants so badly, what he hopes for his own interests and for those of his people, his prophecy is clouded. Jeremiah points out that just because God has gone one place in history, maybe even repeatedly, doesn't mean that God is headed there to that same place this time. Now, I know what you want. You want Hananiah to have been a false prophet, don't you? That would make the story easier. A false prophet, a pretend. But it's confusing, isn't it? Because it won't be that easy for us. Hananiah was a legitimate prophet who should have been every bit as credentialed to be speaking on God's behalf as Jeremiah, except this time he was speaking for himself. So let me ask you again. How does one know what to believe? How do we best decide who we're going to listen to? How do we know if what we're hearing carries any more substance than a fortune cookie? Trace Haythorne says that when two very different messages sound equally true, when they have all the marks and credentials that would lead one to believe that they are trustworthy, how does one know which one is true? What's more, when such messages are uttered in the name of God, how does one discern what is truly of God? Surely God would not utter blatant contradictions. Christians find themselves in such precarious positions, caught between opposing authority all the time. And so do churches and voters and employees. Jeremiah had an issue stacked against him. And so often, as so often seemed to be the case with poor Jeremiah, he was sent to be the bearer of bad news. There is some news, and I've found this to be true, there's some news that is bad, and no matter how you break that news, you did it wrong. Because it wasn't what someone wanted to hear. And so wearing a yoke around his neck to symbolize the rule of the Babylonians, Jeremiah warns the people of Jerusalem to submit to the Babylonians if they want to live. And he adds that history will someday show which one of them, these two prophets, was the true prophet. These who gathered knew Jeremiah. The people to whom Jeremiah had been appointed to prophesy had trusted him. Until now they didn't. Jesus understood this reality well. In both Matthew 13 and Mark chapter 6, Jesus says that a prophet is without honor only in his own hometown. Pastors run into this dynamic all the time. Some of the news we have to deliver is not what anyone wanted to hear. Or a position we espouse doesn't match up with someone's sense of what is almost biblical, and suddenly we aren't the experts we had been touted to be. I didn't read it to you today. I won't read it to you today, but in one of my prayers in the book entitled A Hungry Soul, I muse on how Jesus' own synagogue, people at Nazareth who had babysat him and held him in their laps, suddenly turned on him and tried to kill him once because of his prophecy. If you've been to my office, you've seen the big game-used football helmet from Georgia Tech that's under the glass cover. It's signed to me by my friend, head coach Paul Johnson. And if you came to the Welcome Fellowship when Elizabeth and I were presented, you know that he was one of the members of our church in Atlanta. I was one of his pastors. And one night, Elizabeth and I were at the Johnson's home, and Paul said to me, "Charles, do you know the only difference between my job and yours?" And I said, "Paul, I can think of about 3.5 million differences a year between my job and yours." So yeah, I'm dying to know, what do you think's the only difference between our jobs? And Paul said to me, "I've only got 80% of the people who think they can do my job better than me." When faced with choosing between two messages, if we're honest, most of us will choose what we wanted to hear. Rachel Barge says that Hananiah forgets one big thing, that God's faithfulness does not mean easy grace. He forgets that God's people cannot simply rest on God's past actions and expect deliverance as a matter of course. Now, Jeremiah probably wished that he could be the bringer of glad tidings like Isaiah. Even if not all prophecies are of doom and judgment, though, he knows that the overwhelming message of the prophets has been judgment. The God of the covenant is faithful, but this covenantal faithfulness is not an insurance policy that kicks in automatically the minute you think you need deliverance from hardship. The difference between the messages of Hananiah and Jeremiah, Bard says, is far more than the difference between a message of prosperity and a message of doom. And this is what we may need to hear most from this text today. These two prophets operated with fundamentally different understandings of God and God's covenantal faithfulness. They were far apart before ever a word was spoken. And that can happen to us so easily in our faith too. How can we know when we're hearing the voice of God? How can we guide ourselves to be in touch with God's will? Never will we live in 100% certainty. The starting place is to admit we will never know all we'd like to know, and that of what we know, we will never be 100% right. So the starting place is to admit that we can be wrong, and that we will or should have doubts from time to time, have questions from time to time. But Haythorne says that whenever we're faced with such either-or decisions, real discernment begins not with more debate or panel discussions, not with another book read or another task force established. Discernment begins on our knees, perhaps even prostrate on the floor. Discernment begins in the posture of humility, because it is all too easy for any of us to assume that our certainty is born of God, and that those who disagree are most certainly not of God. Like Hananiah, discerning the truth is not an easy matter, especially since we're so prone to be influenced by what we already want or what we already think will serve our interests. So what is necessary then is to be careful as we think, to analyze the tradition in which we stand, and to know the signs of the times that we can discern what is around us. Because these contests can happen so accidentally, so unwittingly. Good people on both sides, faithful and convicted. So there are no easy answers for discerning truth. Eventually, though, there are some things we can do. We can ask ourselves if the position we're so badly wanting to believe actually sounds like God. Not like us, not like we want, but God. Does this match up with the totality of the scriptural biblical story? Is it based on some obscure misuse of a verse plucked out of the Bible just to make someone's case for what they wanted? Or does it match up especially with the life and teachings of Jesus? Those are questions we can ask anytime. Let me give some examples of conflicting messages within the faith that you will know and you will remember. And to our point today, you might not like my examples. For instance, a New York Times best-selling little pocket-sized book caught on like wildfire about 15 years ago. It was called The Prayer of Jabez. And some of you will remember it. People were giving away copies of it. Good church people, my people, thought it was the greatest thing. It was based on a proof-texted, plucked-out verse or two about an obscure Old Testament figure who prayed a very self-serving prayer. That was for God to increase his land and wealth so that he could be all the more faithful, not to mention, coincidentally, he would have been rich as well. What no one seemed to notice is that in order for Jabez's prayer to have become true, God would have had to have taken from someone else's neighboring allotment of land and animals and territory in order to give to Jabez. In other words, his prayer for increase wished hard times on a neighbor. And this was held up as a model of prayer. But does it sound like our God? Christian bookshelves have been littered for generations with books trying to use especially the biblical writings of Daniel and Revelation to predict the end of times and the return of Christ. I've mentioned this recently. But no one has bothered to listen to Jesus himself in the Gospels as he said about my return, "The time is not for you to know. Even the Son of God himself will not know." But people ignore that because the subject matter seems so interesting, so compelling. Maybe the most egregious example, and if I haven't upset you yet, there's something for everyone here. Maybe the most egregious example I would use of conflicting messages and people needing to decide which one they were going to listen to on God's behalf. Might be the Tim LaHaye series of Left Behind novels. The Left Behind books were gobbled up by Christians in New York Times best-selling numbers, and even some motion pictures were made because of the publishing juggernaut that these novels became. But mainline and thoughtful ministers were ignored as we raised our hands and politely suggested that the rapture concept upon which these were based is not actually a biblical concept at all. But no one wanted to hear that because it was so fascinating, so compelling. So how can we know? Let me give you quickly some bulleted points. How can we know? First of all, does it, whatever it is, sound like God? If you think so, how can you substantiate that without plucking a single verse, proof texting a verse out of context to prove your point? Second, who will your conviction hurt? Who will your conviction hurt, and could you see God hurting them? Here's another thing you could ask. Who will this leave out? And could you see God leaving them out? Here's another question you could ask. This thing that I want to believe and it sounds like God, at what cost? And is this good stewardship? And would this seem to honor God? And finally, maybe the most important question we can ask at all when we're not sure where the voice of God may be coming from. We could ask, how would this advance the kingdom of God consistent with where God has been headed with humanity since creation and especially since the life and teachings of Christ? We can do those things. We can ask those questions, but we have to be willing to hear the answers as they come. Jeremiah said it this way, any old prophet can prophesy war, famine, and pestilence. The ones before us did. They all did. As for the prophet who prophesies peace when the word of that prophet comes true, then it will be known that the Lord has truly sent that prophet. Douglas Bailey tells of hearing a keynote speaker say this, there are two great pathologies in our culture today. One of them is denial. The only antidote for denial is radical truth-telling. The other great pathology is despair. And the only antidote for despair is radical hope, grounded in community, gathered believers together. So we choose very carefully what we'd be willing to break fellowship over. That's one of the hallmarks that made you so appealing to us, so attractive to us. You have a track record of collective wisdom. Even in diversity, even in disagreement, you have proven over the DNA and over the history of your congregation to not be willing to disfellowship very easily. We take our discernment seriously. And as Reinhold Niebuhr said of Jeremiah, why did he waver and concede the field over to Hananiah in today's text? Because all of us have a fear, or should have a fear, of the false prophet within us. Therefore, we ought to speak humbly. So even in truth, Jeremiah did. The voice of God, still, small, cooing as though with a voice of a dove, but discernible if we are willing to try humbly and carefully. Jesus gathered a group of disciples in a private room. He had told them some things coming down the home stretch of the Gospels that they didn't believe and didn't want to hear. And so just before those things that he had told them began to really unfold, he gathered them and he shared with them a meal. And then he shared with them more news. It is our practice each month to share in that meal in worship, that we might remember a time, including a time when Jesus was giving news that no one would believe. We go to the table now and share communion.